like rock and roll. Like I said, you know, like I said, we're not a rock and roll group, but we are in a sense, because we're at the moment in the Syndrome playing bass, drums and keyboards and guitar, and we go on tour and play in front of audiences. So in that sense, we are a rock and roll band, but I mean, we've got absolutely nothing to do with a general idea of rock and roll.
When The Cure toured Australia for the second time recently, Andrew and I spoke to Robert Smith in his hotel room whilst the chambermaid tried to evict us. Though much of the talk centred on touring and the problems of it, which were obviously taking their toll on Robert, the two excerpts we've chosen deal with quite different areas. The first with The Cure's recordings and their relationship with those involved, and the second with criticisms of psychedelia which have been levelled against the band. We come in where Andrew's asked Robert about Chris Parry, the owner of their record label, and their manager.
I've known him now for over 3 years, and it's beyond, I mean, he's not our manager. We haven't got signed contracts with him as manager, but I mean, it's got to the point where you can trade insults freely, yeah. Which is a sign of a healthy relationship. It's just good. He understands it. I mean, like, he just places it musically, and in fact, in all the, what you'd define, I suppose, as a creative area, like, sort of artwork and production and actual form and content of the songs, he leaves entirely up to us now. He criticises all the time, which is good. I mean, it's like we like bring him in for listening, you know, and say, listen to this, and then he'll like throw a perspective on it, and we'll go back and say, all right, and sometimes we'll ignore it. But like with the new single, we did that, and he came in, and because we recorded a new single just before we came out here, and
has that been released?
No. Well, we mixed it supposed to be being released in about a week's time. It's called Charlotte Sometimes.
Is it in a similar vein to Faith and 7 Seconds or...?
No, the drum sound's changed. It's much more aggressive. The whole thing's aggressive, but in a very dreamy way. It's like a distant nightmare. Yeah. It's sort of like threatening, but it never comes close enough to threaten you, really. Classic Cure song, yeah. I suppose, with a lot of people, so they'll get criticised for that. But we were in the studio and we mixed it, and he came in, and what he had to say about it, I've been listening to the cassette of it over the tour, and his like summary of what he thought was wrong, what he thought was right, was quite right.
Yeah.
The good thing about him is like, we're by nature very reactionary. I mean, if we were left totally to our own devices, I think it would probably become self-indulgent, even though I don't recognise self-indulgence. But he's there as like an outside influence, and he's got, I suppose, retains a certain pop sensibility. In that sense, he's got an influence he'll like. But I mean, it's not an influence whereby he'll come in and say, I think you should do this. No. Who come in, and it's much more open there, and say, well, if I was doing this, I'd do that. And it works really well like that, you know, like we can argue points out and things. And he brings it very much into a listening level of actual sounds, which is good. Mike Hedges, who we've always worked with since the first single, since Kern and Aaron, who's started as the engineer and is now like co-producer, who's the other side of the coin. I mean, he's totally deranged. No. If we left it up to him to produce us, it would be really demented.
Yeah.
And so they have big arguments in the studio, and we all like crowd around and listen. And it's like the music's taken to a very, not superficial, but an immediate level when Chris is talking. He sort of like hears things as if they've been played on the radio. He sort of hears things as singles or as a first-time listener,
yeah.
Which is why it's much more value just bringing him in and letting him listen to a song rather than working with it, because he's got a very good ear for knowing, you know, what a song is either lacking, in his opinion, always. And Mike Hedges is the other extreme. He's always wanting to go really over the top in a word, and it's like, let's do this and let's do that, and I'm always having to sit there going, no, we can't. But they're very peripheral influences anyway. I mean, most of it is worked out by us. We usually send everybody out of the studio and we just sit there for hours just messing about. And when we've decided on what we want to do and the sounds we want, then we bring other people in. That's the general way we record. Sometimes it differs, but that's usually waste a lot of time. You can't work things out when you're not in the studio. It's very difficult to get a solid idea of a sound. I mean, it's very easy to imagine an overall shape to something, but to actually define a sound, you have to go into a studio and play. And it's, you know, there's always like the nagging side of it that suddenly starts creeping on your shoulder about the money and how much it's costing, which is good because like Mike Hedges has just opened up his own studio, so now reached the happy position of having like what's virtually our own record label and also our own studio, really, because we can go there. Done without us ever having to listen to any tracks. But at the same time, listen to even a song like Three Imaginary Boys, it's people can't say, hey, you must have had a really good trip in your DNA, things like that. But that whole thing, like I say, is the only thing I don't understand is how it can be levelled as a criticism against the band, because it really depends on how a critic would define psychedelia anyway, because I mean, like,
for me it'd be an attitude in terms
yeah
of, like,
but to me Joy Division are psychedelic in the sense that they everything that they do and everything they did was totally reliant upon atmosphere, and I don't know, it's very difficult. I mean, that the whole of it, it's such an awful phrase because it's bandied about so much by so many different people. It's like that, like everything, you know. It's like rock and roll, like I say, you know. Like I say, we're not a rock and roll group, but we are in a sense, because we're at the moment in the Syndrome playing bass, drums and keyboards and guitar, and we go on tour and play in front of audiences. So in that sense, we are a rock and roll band, but I mean, we've got absolutely nothing to do with a general idea of rock and roll. And it's the same, I think, with when people level that criticism at bands like us and all the other groups, that is, you know, about this, the new psychedelia and things. I mean, there's obviously affinities. I mean, I grew up, because like all three of us, the thing we've got in common is we've all got older brothers exactly the same age. We're like second generation friends. Yeah. And we grew up with that music anyway. If, like, I mean, songs that I used to play to me when I was about, I mean, the first concert I ever went to was Jimi Hendrix at the Isle of Wight, which is a good start for a young hippie. But I mean, all things like Captain Beefheart and things which are very hit names to drop an answer, like, have you heard? No. We're just like, all of us, we listened to them anyway, without hating a lot of it, but it was just like constantly there. And then suddenly in like about 1973, Gary Glitter came along and we started on our own. And it's just, I mean, it's very cyclical anyway, I think. I really like, if I had to choose like the type of music I'd listen to, it would be stuff like Eno's ambient music, which was, we were playing yesterday night, and things like Eric Sarti and stuff that relies totally on atmosphere. But at the same time, I like things like Public Image, which is very powerful. I don't know, there's room for everything. I don't think we're particularly psychedelic.